Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I want you to tell these people where we are. City of
Compton! Yeah. The start of Sunday night's Academy Awards was perfect. The Queen, Beyoncé, standing center court on the same Compton, California tennis courts where Venus and Serena Williams trained during their childhood under the watchful eye and stern guidance of their father, Richard Williams. B's braided, beaded black girl dancers include her own 8-year-old, Blue Ivy. And Beyoncé's Be Alive, it was the epic live performance our pandemic-starved souls had been yearning for. And with it, the Oscar-nominated artist performed a kind of artistic corrective, sliding joyful black girlhood back to the center of the King Richard story. Such an auspicious beginning made what happened later in the evening all the more jarring.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it, all right? That was a nice one. Okay. I'm out here. Uh-oh. Richard. Oh, wow. Will Smith just smacked the shit out of me. Wow, dude.
Yes.
It was a G.I. Jane joke.
Keep my wife's name out your mouth.
I'm going to, okay?
Comedian Chris Rock mocked Jada Pinkett Smith's appearance, and her husband, Will Smith, got on stage and slapped the comedian. Shortly after that, Smith won the Academy Award for Best Actor.
Richard Williams was a fierce defender of his family. In this time in my life, in this moment, I am overwhelmed by what God is calling on me to do and be in this world.
It was hard to process. Was it a laudable moment of loving defense? A man protecting his beloved wife against an onslaught of cruelty commonly reserved for black girls and women? If read in this way, the moment parallels the man that Smith portrays in King Richard. Richard Williams, that father of Venus and Serena, he regularly sought to form a kind of protective shield over his daughters. Here's Richard Williams stepping in during an interview that Venus did on ABC in 1995 when she was just 14.
You got to understand that you're dealing with an image of a 14-year-old child, and this child gonna be out there playing when your old ass and me gonna be in the grave. When she says something, we done told you what's happening. You're dealing with a little black kid, and let her be a kid. She done answered it with a lot of confidence. Leave that alone.
Or should we read Will Smith's actions as simple brutality, a stunning, unprofessional overreaction? On Monday night, Smith apologized on Instagram to Rock, writing, quote, "Jokes at my expense are part of the job, but a joke about Jada's medical condition was too much for me to bear, and I reacted emotionally. I'd like to publicly apologize to you, Chris. I was out of line and I was wrong. I'm embarrassed and my actions were not indicative of the man I want to be. There's no place for violence in a world of love and kindness." Today, after the incident has been dissected, analyzed, retweeted, one thing seems clear. The slap undid the work of Beyoncé's opening performance because it shoved a woman out of the center of her own story and replaced her experience with his violence. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and that's where The Takeaway begins. With me now is Mark Anthony Neal, the James B. Duke Distinguished Professor of African and African American Studies at Duke University and host of the podcast Left of Black. Professor Neil, it's great to have you back on the show.
How are you doing, Melissa?
I'm great. I do want to talk about this idea of protection. It's one that I feel like comes up a lot in classes, in scholarship, and in our public discourse about families, but maybe particularly about Black families and Black men's role in those families.
I'll admit that my first reaction to the slap was to say, you know, that I ain't mad at Will Smith. It seemed as though he was showing up for his wife and thus showing up more broadly for Black women. And again, this is after the week that we all witnessed the grilling of Ketanji Brown Jackson. So there were many folks who were sensitive about the treatment of Black women in the public sphere. And it reminded me of Jamil Lemieux's, you know, piece about Dave Chappelle, about, you know, how Black men don't show up for Black women. But this is the thing. To show up is not to show up with your hands. You know, what was not on display was support of Jada necessarily, even Black women, but I would argue a display of toxic masculinity. It spoke to the emotional limits of Will Smith and then, you know, more broadly Black men, you know, to be, not be able to show ways of support for Black women without, you know, going back to the old adage of, you know, of using their hands, of force, of violence. And no, it wasn't the kind of violence that would put Chris Rock on his back. But there was a performative gesture there that he was attempting to shame, you know, Chris Rock with an act of violence because he felt as though, you know, Chris Rock had shamed his wife.
You know, I immediately thought of the King Richard film because in the film there are these multiple interactions with young Black men on the tennis courts. And in the first, Richard Williams, to protect his family, to protect the oldest daughter, actually takes a beating, is beaten pretty violently. He later in the film then thinks of enacting violence against these same young men, takes his gun out, right? This kind of what we've thought of and defined as the proper masculine role, right? Get your gun, protect your girls, but is stopped from being able to enact that violence. And you realize in that moment how it would not have protected the family, that in fact it would have opened them to the vulnerability of being without him, without his income, without his guidance. And yet, you get why that seems like the thing to do.
No question. And it often, you know, puts this, a light on the family that causes, you know, situations to put them in more detriment. For Will Smith, you know, that means questioning about whether or not he can keep his Oscar. But the more extended shame that's now put upon the Smith family because of his actions, right? It raises more questions about the aspects of their interpersonal relationship that they have gone public with that have become now part of their brand. And I think at that moment, you have to realize the limits. I mean, Will Smith has had numerous opportunities to speak to the kind of chronic disease that his wife, Jada Pinkett Smith, is suffering from. Alopecia, you know, is a disease, some forms of it that almost exclusively affect Black women. You know, you're hard pressed as a Black man to not have some Black woman in your life who is suffering from hair loss. And in that case, you know, I don't want to lose sight of Chris Rock's role here, because in some ways, you know, his performance is, you know, in many ways, Chris Rock had one job. He was there to announce the award for best documentary film. I mean, that gets lost in all of this moment now. He did what he was supposed to do as a comedian, right? He's looking for literally the kill in the audience who he can go after doing a quick scan. And Jada and Will, of course, are right there. But at the same time, to make fun of a Black woman's chronic disease, you know, and it could be alopecia, right? When we think about the limits of what Black men know about Black women's chronic health, how many Black men really understand alopecia? We could also be having a conversation about fibroids within this context. And this lack of knowledge of Black, what the kinds of chronic diseases that afflict Black women are a form of toxic masculinity in and of itself, right? So we have this performance on all sides.
And yet, Chris Rock did make a whole documentary about black women and hair. If there's any brother in the room who would know or should know, right? No. Who should have an understanding of it. I want to go back to your point about the on-edgedness that many have felt in the sort of the wake of the Ketanji Brown Jackson Supreme Court confirmation process and what often felt like very brutal questioning, because it does put into sharp relief the moment when Senator Cory Booker mounts a clear defense, not by removing her from the center and putting himself at the center, as so many other people on both sides did during that week, but really by doing exactly what you're saying, by talking about black womanhood, by centering those long experiences of black women and the power of that moment as compared to the slap.
Yeah, and that's why even in the context of King Richard, you know, there is some interesting irony here, right? Because one of the critiques of the film, and you know, and I thought it was an extraordinary film. I thought it was wonderful to get a backstory on what motivated Richard Williams in the way that he did, you know, in support of his daughters, you know, playing a sport in which, you know, black folks were not highly visible. But the film, of course, decenters, you know, the life of Venus and Serena. It decentered the life of their mother. Unfortunately, even in Will's comments afterwards, it really decentered the great performance of Anjanou Ellis as their mother. It decentered Venus and Serena, whose story we should have been celebrating in this moment, which was not different than, you know, the week earlier or 2 weeks earlier when director Jane Campion did the same thing, right, in response to their genius. I don't think there are enough black men who understand the ways that, you know, being there for black women, right? Writing for black women doesn't mean to center your performance of writing for black women, right? But it's actually to have the kind of emotional knowledge, right? The emotional intellect to stand back from your standard forms of performing masculinity to create a space for us to be able to consider the lives and concerns and the trauma and successes of black women.
I want to talk about one more piece here and maybe get from you a sense of what's possible. So I haven't been able to stop since the slap. I haven't been able to stop thinking about my mentor, Dr. Maya Angelou, who I think many people are aware of her personal story of being raped as a child and then being mute for many years thereafter. Something always, I think, gets missed when you read I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. You have to read that it's not only the horror of the assault, but it's that when she testifies against her rapist, he is then killed by her uncles. And she goes mute because she believes that her testimony, that her voice actually took someone's life. And I think of how many, you talk about it'd be hard to be a black man and not know a woman with alopecia or with fibroids. I got to say, it's also almost impossible to know a black woman, to have all the black women in your life and not have at least one of them, or maybe many of them, be survivors of sexual assault and abuse. And I think of how often we don't speak, in large part to protect the black men we love in our lives from defending us. And in so doing, making themselves targets of a criminal justice system that loves neither us nor them. And I'm wondering about how, given the ways that we raise boys to think that this is what protection is, how we can start to get to a definition of manhood that allows room for women to talk about our experiences.
The thing about toxic masculinity, and particularly in this case, as we're discussing, you know, Will Smith, there are so many black men that create facades. Their ideal of what it means to be a man in the world, a black man in the world. And I think one of the things we saw with Will Smith on stage is that he's cracking under the pressure of maintaining that facade. Right. You know, folks joked about, you know, he showed that he was really from West Philadelphia. But, you know, what he's been doing for the last 30 years is performing a facade to make people forget that's where he came from, to forget the trauma that he was raised with, some of the stuff that he, you know, talked about in his memoir. We really need to get to a moment and a place where Black men, Black boys feel comfortable in the bodies that they are and not feel that they have to live up to some sort of idealized version of masculinity and Black masculinity, right? And it's difficult, right? Because we have all of these media images. Social media now is at play in terms of, you know, putting into the world this ideal notion of how you're supposed to respond to stuff. You know, Will Smith in part is responding to the ways that the world viewed him and other Black men viewed him in relation to the dynamics of his marriage with Jada Pinkett Smith and what's happening, the stuff that's been made public and how he reacts. You know, there's a way in which, you know, we look at that slap and it's like, you know, art is, you know, imitating fiction and or art is imitating real life in this kind of moment, right? He's like Richard Williams on stage, but even Richard Williams knew not to cross the line to be violent in defense of his daughters, right? You know, it's almost as if, you know, he wished that was Tupac, you know, the interaction that he didn't have with Tupac 30 years ago. It's like, you know, Chris Rock becomes a stand-in for all these men who are saying to Will Smith, you're not man enough, right? You need to man up, right? And, you know, he needs to be able to pull back from that. He needs to have an emotional sense of himself, you know, to better respond emotionally and intellectually to these challenges about who he is in the world. And this, by extension, you know, who Black men can be in the world.
As always, Mark Anthony Neal, James B. Duke, Distinguished Professor of African and African-American Studies at Duke University and host of the podcast Left of Black. Thanks so much for coming and for talking through all of this with me. I so appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa.